Yes, it's that time of day, and we've got Cheryl Shaw and Dr. David Tabrett with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yes. Now, I noticed, Cheryl, you've got an umbrella pin today.
Yes.
So I'm assuming we're talking about the rain and...
Yep. Raining cats and dogs, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, great idiom there.
See what you did there.
Lovely.
So what are we talking about? How they cope with the weather or staying inside?
Some protection for them. So we were talking about using a rain jacket.
Oh, yes, we're going to dress up the pets.
Oh, not quite a dress-up scene, but protection.
Excellent. Mm. And David, have you got something for us today?
A couple of things, obviously, depending on how many calls come in.
Yes.
From our lovely listeners. So just a highlight of, I think, last week was World Veterinary Day. Mm-hmm. You think I'd be able to say that?
You think so?
After all these years. And just wanted to highlight one of my experiences around what that means, but also touching on an important subject, which is stray animal management.
Okay. Excellent. Well, I believe it's also Adopt a Animal from a Shelter Day as well today. So that's good timing.
Today, tomorrow,
any day. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we're going to get straight into it. We've got Karen from Rankin Park on the line. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thank you. Now, you've got a 15-year-old cat that won't wee in its litter tray, but will just wee beside it. Actually, I've got a cat that poos just outside its litter tray as well, so maybe we can both find out what to do.
Different problems.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Karen, how's your cat health-wise?
Perfectly fine, I think.
Yes.
She's not due for another checkup for a couple of months, but... She seems fine. She's eating well. Up till about a week or so ago, she's been using her litter tray for both ends of the business.
Yep.
But all of a sudden, I noticed the piles next to the litter tray were wet, and I couldn't work it out. And I mopped it up, and it wasn't too smelly. And then I bought her a new litter tray because I thought the old one might be leaking, and I washed it the same way. And hey, presto, she's doing a poo in it, but she's not weeing. I've sprayed the floor with lavender disinfectant that I wash her litter tray out with always. That didn't work. So then yesterday I put some double strength vinegar down, and that didn't work either. So I don't know what to do.
So is she weeing in the litter tray at all?
No.
No? And anywhere else in the house?
No. Only in the tiles in the laundry next to the litter tray.
All right. And can she get outside?
No, it's an indoor cat.
Oh, okay. Do you have any other animals?
No.
Okay. So the type of litter, have you changed that? You said you changed the tray.
No, the litter, I used that recycled paper one.
Yeah. Yeah. It might be worth changing the litter, but I think there's probably a couple of other problems I can think that is causing this to happen. One is it doesn't sound like so much as behavioural if she's using the tray to defecate but not to urinate. And then I was thinking about whether she's got some physical problem that is limiting her ability to use the tray, and that could be arthritis, for instance.
I don't think that's the case because the edges of the tray would be 6 inches tall and she can still jump onto the kitchen cabinets without a problem.
Yeah, that was my next question, whether she's jumping up and things like that. The other problem sometimes we'll see this with is if they're urinating more frequently, maybe because of problems like kidney disease and things like that, sometimes they just kind of don't make it. But again, that would be maybe she would be in the tray some of the time, or there would be other episodes elsewhere. But I certainly wouldn't rule that out.
I've looked everywhere else.
Yeah.
And if that was the case, you'd think if she was caught short, she'd just pee anywhere. But it's always next to the litter tray.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we go through this is kind of the process, right, of ruling in and ruling out possibilities as to what's causing it and characterising exactly what the problem is so that we understand whether, you know, is it a behavioural problem? Is it like the mobility problem that we talked about? Is it related to urine frequency? such as diabetes or kidney disease, those sort of things. Because when we actually get through all of that list, we kind of are whittling away the possibilities until we get to it's a behavioural problem. And so that becomes, it's quite a common problem actually with cats. And there's a whole range of different things. But cats will sometimes avoid the litter for urination, as you found out. But she kind of knows that that's the right area to be in. Yeah. So now, have you only got one litter tray?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we need a second litter tray. You'd probably be able to use the previous one. And I would use a different litter in it. And I would have, you said they're in the laundry?
Yeah.
I'd probably, depending on the size of the laundry, you could have them both in the same room. Don't have them side by side. But otherwise, I might consider putting one in another part of the house.
Okay.
All right. So what we're trying to do is give her more options, but you're also experimenting. Is it the position? Is it the location? Is there something else that's changed that we don't know about and we can't know about? Is it the type of litter that she's suddenly maybe had an aversion to? But they'll still use the tray to defecate because that's kind of like, you know, I will go nowhere else, for instance. So I have seen cats do this where they hop into an empty bathtub because they'll urinate on that smooth surface and they're pretty smart. They know it gets washed away. So once you kind of go through all these steps, and it's worth probably trying out a second litter tray, a different type of litter, maybe in the same room, maybe in a different room. If none of those things are going to work, then I would be probably getting back to the vet for an early checkup just to make sure that, you know, she hasn't got any kidney disease, we haven't got any diabetes, things that are going to cause her to need to urinate a bit more frequently. And if all of those things are okay, then it may be that we're dealing with a behavioural problem, and that's when we turn to things like Feliway, the pheromone that make cats feel really calm. And look, that's not a bad idea anyway, but they can be a little bit more expensive. And if you find a second litter tray solves the problem, then you know, you'll get out of this fairly cost effectively. So
if I use another litter tray, what litter should I use? Because I'm using the recycled paper now. Should I use the
Could be the crystals. If you're using the clumping paper, you can use a sand, you can use crystals. There's a lot of different ones, and sometimes it's a little bit of trial and error.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good idea, Karen. But another thing that you could try is getting one of the enzymatic cleaners. I know that you said you've used other products to clean the area, but if you get an enzymatic breakdown that breaks down the urine, it may stop her from weeing outside the tray as well.
Yeah. The other thing you said about the lavender cleaner, I wouldn't use anything that strong in terms of odour.
The only reason I did it is because when I wash her tray out, I wash it out with soapy water and then I put a bit of the lavender disinfectant in and swoosh it around, then tip it out. And I've been doing that every time for 15 years.
Yeah. And so she might be used to that.
Used to that smell.
Yeah.
Thought I'll blitz her with the double strength vinegar. But
yeah, now you need to break down that ammonia smell that could be triggering her to wee outside the tray.
So what is that product, please?
There's a lot of them around. You can get it from your vet or from one of the pet shops, but it's a urine destroyer, so it destroys the urine.
Oh, excellent. Okay, I'll get that. I think that's a good idea.
Okay,
thanks
that's
very
good.
Much. Karen, all the best. Hopefully you have some luck. Fingers crossed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
About over it.
Yes, no doubt.
Take care.
Thanks for your advice. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hello.
Now, you've got a Kelpie that's anxious and nervous around a new baby.
Yes, yes, yes.
Hi, Karen. Now, how old's your Kelpie?
He is 9 this year.
Okay. And how old's your baby?
10 weeks old.
Okay, so very fresh.
Yes.
Yep. And do you have any other dogs?
Yes, and now this is from, I'm calling on behalf of my daughter.
Sure.
It's her baby, her dog.
Yep.
Yes, she has another, she's a terrier cross. She is 17 this year.
Okay.
Yeah, just beautiful.
Yeah. So what's happening with the, what's the Kelpie's name, sorry?
Coda.
Coda. What's happening with Coda?
He's just very, he seems like very anxious. Wherever the baby is and my daughter is, he's there, and he's sort of like, if you're standing in front of the cot, he'll come and stand in front of you, and he just the look on his face, like it's real anxiety. It's, and they're just not sure how to take it. Like, is it, he looks like he's ready to pounce, but it also looks like he's worrying or, especially when the baby cries.
They're very intense, aren't they, Kelpies? As a,
very.
And very expressive in their face as well.
Yeah.
So what about physical signs like pacing, breathing patterns, any eating problems or sleeping problems? Not with the baby, with the Coda the dog? No?
No.
So no pacing and panting or anything like that?
He does that a little bit, yes, when the baby's crying and when he's around the baby, yes. Yeah. Yes, he does.
And is this the first baby, first child?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's a very common scenario. Life, as you know, with kids, everything changes. Everything is disrupted. And that includes for our pets as well. Everything's disrupted. How's the 17-year-old dog going?
Oh, she's fantastic. She's great. I mean,
does she know there's a baby in the house?
She does. She does. I mean, she can't hear anything.
But, yeah, right. Okay.
She's sleeping a lot nowadays, but she still goes for walks with them, and yeah, she's really good.
So vets get very anxious when we see anxious Kelpies and there's a baby in the house. Mm. Okay, because there is certainly the potential and risks associated with any misadventure. So we want to be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
And very cautious with how these situations are approached.
Mm-hmm.
I think it needs more close attention with a professional to make sure that everything happens or is everybody does what they're supposed to do in regards to Coda and how the baby interacts so that we don't end up with any, you know, terrible bad problems.
Yeah. Yes.
So just a word of caution, because on a phone call on a pet chat, we can't really even scratch the surface on what are some of the issues and how we might address them. So Kelpie, first of all, as a breed, they're a herding animal. So it's their job is to, and their work and their basic instinct is to, you know, go around and bring animals or things that sound like animals, let's get them moving, let's get things happening. They can also be, I guess this is for any dog, but certainly a 10-year-old dog, they can be somewhat of an anxious breed type.
He is an anxious dog, yes, yeah.
So a lot of the time, and we're kind of past this point, but a lot of the time when I speak to people about, you know, there's a baby on the way, then we're going to do some months of work with the dog before the baby arrives to try and reduce the impact and the disruption that can occur. You know, there's new smells, there's new noises, everybody's got altered sleeping patterns. The kitchen smells different, everything smells different. And then there's this also a diversion of attention. So Coda's not getting the attention that Coda used to get before. And the reason is that little thing that's squirmy and pink and makes a lot of noise and smells. So you can see from Coda's perspective, it's like, hang on, my world's turned upside down and I don't like it.
Yes, definitely.
So some of that suggests, you know, a little bit about what we might be doing, and that is to make sure, first of all, that, A, they don't have any contact.
Yes.
Okay, at this point, we're not going to venture into that. But B is to make sure that Coda gets some absolute solo attention.
Yes.
All right. So no baby around, and whether it's a walk or it's a play in the backyard, just as a way to try and maintain some normalcy for Coda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Clothing and things like that we would sometimes do with rugs and so on, so that that's a way to introduce smells to the dog.
Right.
Okay. So that the impact and the disruption associated with the smells, I don't know what it is, so now I'm anxious. We're going to reduce that anxiety saying, look, here's a rug, here's a throw. You can have a sniff of this and everybody's going to try and calm down a little bit. Okay.
So like one of the baby's rugs.
Yeah, yeah. Baby rug. Yep. You may not be able to retrieve it, that's all.
No, that's fine, yeah.
You don't just give it to him. Like you actually have to supervise that,
yes,
so that it's only a small amount of exposure and things like that. The other thing I would, again, just going back to the note that I think you need to have someone coaching and being very cautious and working with the parents along the way. But the other thing I would suggest is that you get some dog pheromone or DAP, dog appeasing pheromone. And just as we were saying for our last caller around her cat behaviour, so these are a liquid that can be activated by either spray or misting, and they actually calm dogs down.
Okay, yeah.
So they can be used in the house.
Okay. Right.
So that can be very helpful. Some dogs do need medication, but just the DAP liquid is probably going to be a little bit of assistance to allow Coda to be a bit more calmer, getting a bit more attention, bit of exposure to some smells. These are things that over time are going to reduce that anxiety.
Right. Okay.
Yeah,
good luck with that. Hopefully,
fingers crossed.
Luck. Yeah, fingers crossed. Let us know how you go.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you very much.
Can I just ask one more thing?
Yeah.
When you said like a professional,
yes.
What would you suggest there?
Talk to your vet or talk to Coda's vet, and they will be able to put you in touch with someone.
Okay,
yeah,
perfect. Thank
that's
you.
The best way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. This is Pet Chat on 2NU RFM. Now, Cheryl, you wanted to talk about rain and animals.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Well, I've got to tell you, I've just been unpacking a whole lot of raincoats and I thought this is a great topic for air. So rain jackets are really good for dogs that you do take out walking. Now, I have poodles and my poodles do not like rain. So, you know, if I suggested a walk in the rain, they'd head back inside. They're not going outside to get wet at all. And a lot of dogs can be like that. But, Dave, do you take your dogs out in the rain?
I do. And because I've got the two dogs, one of them, let's go for a walk, whatever. The other one, no.
Yeah.
No. But I do have rain jackets.
That's good.
Yes. Well, so, now I've got better rain jackets.
Well, wearing a rain jacket is important for a whole range of reasons, not just for the dog, but for us as well. Because when a dog gets wet, you cannot allow it just to come home and be saturated. That's just not on. Particularly if you've got a young dog, you've got an older dog or a dog with health compromised, you know, we've got to be careful about what we're doing with them. The reason is that when a dog gets wet, it saturates them and their body temperature drops. And so then if they're laying around, they're going to be shivering and cold. But another thing that happens is when they're wet, the moisture that's sitting on the skin starts to breed bacteria and yeast. So we end up with another problem, which we don't even really think about. We just think, oh, the dog's got wet. You know, it's been for a walk or it's been out to go to the toilet. So if you're wearing if your dog is wearing a rain jacket, it's going to eliminate some of those issues that the dog can have. The last thing you want to be doing is treating, you know, that yeast Malassezia on the dog, which means, you know, two or three times a week bathing and properly drying, completely drying, no moisture. So the rain jacket is going to really help out. The other thing with the rain jacket, when you're fitting a rain jacket, make sure that it does cover the dog properly, that it's not limiting how they move, because some jackets are really tight under the armpits. We need to make sure that, you know, it fits properly. Some have little leg straps that you can put in, like an elastic, that keep them nice and snug. So when you come back from the walk, you're only going to have to worry about the head, the tail and the legs. So drying that isn't going to take you so long. So that's the benefit for the human. The other thing is when you are out and about, don't allow your dogs to drink out of puddles. This is a real no-go. Yes. There's lots of bacteria. You know, in most areas, there's rats around in Newcastle. We can end up with lepto, you know, from those water sources.
Oh, very good point. Yes, yeah, of course.
Yeah, and that's a very serious disease. So we want to make sure that, you know, number one, that our pets are being immunised for leptospirosis as well, and that we don't allow them to drink out of, you know, these puddle areas.
Mm. What are signs of leptospirosis?
So it's a bacterium that infects predominantly the kidneys, but also the liver. So the dogs go into kidney failure and liver failure. Mm. It's treatable with antibiotics, but not every dog is going to respond, or the damage is so severe. And the mortality, the death rate, is up to 50%. So one in two dogs that get lepto will die.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Amanda, it comes from the urine from the rat. So it's actually, you know, one of those things that if a rat has been somewhere and it's weed, it's likely to run off into other areas. And
And we've had it over the past 20 years at least, I know, there's been two big outbreaks of leptospirosis in Newcastle. And the most recent one was probably about 2 years ago around the Spears Point area. And prior to that, maybe 10, 15 years ago, there was an outbreak around Merriweather area. So, and we saw come through our hospital, and myself speaking to other general practice vets in the area, clusters of dogs, multiple dogs that were infected and suffering from leptospirosis.
How quick do what's the word I'm looking for?
The symptoms,
yes,
or the signs?
How quickly do the symptoms come on?
Yeah, well, it's because of the bacterial effect, the agent itself is going to be pretty fast acting. The degree of disease is progressive. So they'll start off with mild symptoms as more and more of the kidneys are infected. I mean, we're talking days to a week.
Okay, well.
Yeah. So, it's interesting because I have been walking a lot with my dogs, trying to keep them away from the puddles.
Yeah, because they just want to go and play in it, and you don't want them to drink out of those puddles. I saw a rat on the way here on the road dead.
Oh.
So that was a good sign.
she lined it up.
She did.
Now, Cheryl, I did want to ask, though, putting rain jackets on them, aren't we pampering our pets? They didn't used to have rain jackets.
Oh, look,
happened then?
A lot of pets used to just live on the porch and, you know, fend for themselves, but these days.
And they get their Malassezia and their skin infections.
Yeah,
right.
And now we know better.
Yeah. Right. Mm. There you go.
And if it's raining too much, stay at home. Don't go for the walk.
Sounds good.
Just pop on some Netflix and,
sit on the lounge with the dog.
Put on Paw Patrol for the dog. Let's
set up a treadmill for them.
Yeah, treadmill and Paw Patrol. Sorted.
There you go.
You're listening to Pet Chat, and we are going to check out our Pet of the Week on 2NURFM. So if you head to our website, 2NURFM.com.au, and you'll find the lifestyle programs there, and you'll find our Pet of the Week. And we've got Peppa and Izzy Pear today.
I'm keen to find out the origin of the name Izzy Pear.
She's very cute. She's a little cat, and we've got Peppa the dog. We'll start with Peppa. Do you want to do the honours?
Well, we were just discussing, we're not quite sure exactly how old Pepper is, but a very playful pup and looking, obviously, for the forever home. And at the moment, Pepper's very happy with people, loves to be with people, being on you, but also gets along with other dogs, both male and female, which is good to have a bit of socialisation already happened.
He's only 11 kilos, so he likes you can sit on your lap. And have a cuddle.
I don't think he's going to turn into 50 kilos. So there you go.
No.
Not by the look of him. He does like to be inside, as I said, close to people. So having an inside-outside dog would be ideal if he can find a house with that. Obviously, just being aware that he needs to settle in to any household. So, you know, if there's you've got to have a good fence, obviously. But whilst he gets along with other dogs, we've got to make sure he settles in so that he can be a successful placement.
Exactly. And he's still training a little bit, but it sounds like he's a very nice and friendly dog. And if you want some cuddles, then he's the one for you. Now, next we've got Izzy Pear. A cute little puss. She's
About 5 months old, and little Graham White cat. She had a bit of a rough start. She was the runt of the litter and came into care quite malnourished. So looks like they've done a great job because her photo looks pretty good. Very affectionate, but happy to look after herself as well. So hopefully when she finds a house, it doesn't mean you have to be there all the time. She'll be happy to run riot.
Mm.
And
she wants to rule the roost.
Leave a mess through your house.
Hopefully not too much mess.
That's why you get pets, though, isn't it?
They do. They're just beautiful.
Yeah. They're messy in your life, but we love them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So if you want to take a look at those, you can jump on our website too, nurfm.com.au. Now, David, you had a couple of little things to chat about. We've got about 3.5 minutes.
Yes. Well, first of all, Saturday, so what's today? Wednesday, last Saturday, was World Veterinary Day. I'm going to get that right one day. World Veterinary Day.
Just say World Vet Day.
Yeah, that'll do. And interestingly, you know, we kind of see there's a million days for every day, isn't there?
There is.
Right. And I think that most of these kind of events and acknowledgements are really about for the people within that profession, industry or environment. So we acknowledge the work that everybody does through the profession across all domains, whether it's biosecurity, research. There's a whole area called One Health where vets are working close with public health and medical personnel to protect us all, really. But from my own perspective, it's interesting to see. I think the theme I've noticed is that it's about recognising the team. And I do know that whilst there's, as a veterinarian, you're seen as a leader and the provider, but I couldn't do what I do without a full team. And that includes our well-trained and certified veterinary nurses, our animal attendants, our reception staff, and our management and admin staff. So, you know, whether we're looking after pets, whether we're looking after livestock, whether we're looking after One Health, we're all working together as a team. So that's what it means to me. The other thing is we've just had 5 public holidays in a row, 2 long weekends. As someone said to me, the world's shortest week last week. And I'm reminded that at those times, stray animals are a big issue if they're not all the time. And one of the things that we want to keep in mind is that under current legislation and under protocols are established out of that legislation, the stray animals can be a significant problem for suburbs and neighbourhoods. And we want to make sure that those animals get back to their owners. So, you know, we encourage microchipping. But where they can't be placed back or they're just causing a nuisance, then the local council has the responsibility to make sure that there's processes or places for those animals to go. And we're working, I know at least in our hospital, we work very closely with, 6 councils because of the nature of our business. We're open all the time. So we're dealing with councils out of our area as well. And we know that they're working hard to address these problems. But it has become something of a real topic across, I know, with state government, things like that. So if you have got stray animals around your environment there, talk to the councils and the council rangers and see what can be done.
Good idea. And if you'd like to adopt an animal, then,
that's another way to solve the problem.
There go to a shelter and adopt an animal.
Or Pepper and Izzy Pear.
Yes. I mean, Izzy Pear, that's a great name for a cat, isn't it?
I know. I'd love to find out the origin of that.
I know. Now, I just want to say congratulations. We've had 2 callers today. We had Karin and Karen.
Oh, yes.
And congratulations to Karin from Rankin Park. You have won the $50 pet food voucher. Apologies to Karen. I can only give it to one person. So maybe next time. And thank you very much. So that's pretty much it for today. Thank you so much. We'll
catch
up with you next week on Pet Chat.
Thank
you. 2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com. Thank you.